Good morning, everyone. Hello. Namaste. Welcome to our chapel. My name is Emma Petersheim, and I'm a senior here at EMU. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the word namaste, it is a term traditionally used in greeting one another in India. Its most universal meaning refers to the acknowledgement of the soul in one person by another person. To quote a man I met one day in a cafe in New Delhi, namaste is used to welcome a guest. Two hands joined together references your full whole being coming together to respect another person's soul. It is similar to when Christians in your country pray with their hands joined together. You are entering into a conversation or interaction, recognizing the soul or God in another person. In India, the guest you are greeting is held to the same respect as a God. Throughout our 3.5 months, we used it almost everywhere we went to greet our host and hostesses. A 30-minute chapel certainly won't describe this whole semester for us, but we hope it gives you a taste into our wild adventure. Welcome to the spring of 2018 India Cross-Cultural Chapel.
Beauty in the chaos. Hundreds of people, thousands of colors, one body. The eyes see. Spices, flowers, exhaust fumes, and stale urine. The nose smells. Beads, bags, boxes, the outstretched and grabbing hand begging for something, anything. The fingertips touch. A honking sea of yellow and green, of two wheels, of three wheels, of four, and of none. The dogs, the birds, the curly-horned cow, the boys playing cricket in the street. The lungs breathe. Bells, horns, and the rhythmic voices that seep through the temple walls early in the morning. The shouts and the laughter, oh, the laughter, which rises through the air like music, music. The ears listen. Hindi, Urdu, Malayalam, Punjabi, Rajasthani, Tibetan, Ladakhi, English? The tongue speaks. One body, yes, one body. A woman squats on her mat on the street as two men argue over the price that is already too little. A family takes a moment as they pass the town temple to bow their heads in prayer. The drums from last night's festival still hang in the air. Now look. The women sit down to share tea time. Don't forget to feed the ants. The heart beats. Beauty. Beauty in the chaos.
Okay. Seth Weaver said I get a burrito if I say this all in one breath. So... all right. Dolus, Amsterdam, Delhi, Kolkata, Bagai, Nalanda, Ragir, Varanasi, Sunabatan Beach, Margo, Panjim, Devar Island, Nochaveli Village, Guruvayur, Kovlam, Guruvayur, Trivandrum, Delhi, Mandua, Bikaner, Manvar, Judapur, Udapur, Ranpur, Jaipur.
No!
Dolus, Amsterdam, Delhi, Kolkata, Bagai, Nalanda, Ragir, Varanasi, Sunabatan Beach, Margo, Panjim, Devar Island, Nochaveli Village, Guruvayur, Kovlam, Guruvayur, Trivandrum, Delhi, Mandua, Bikaner, Manvar, Judapur, Udapur, Ranpur, Jaipur, Agra, Delhi, Amritsar, Wagabur, Deandrum, Delhi, Leh, Alchinu, Ravelli, Leh, Pingong Lake, Lay Delhi, Amsterdam, Dulles. That's all the places we've been to. There you go.
New Delhi, Calcutta, Bodh Gaya, Varanasi. The first 2 weeks were weeks of exposure. Exposure to culture, to color, to noise. A beginning of many conversations, a foundation of many understandings. As we reflect on Bodh Gaya and Varanasi, both significant holy sites of pilgrimage, an overwhelming flood of images, smells, sensations, and emotions surface.
Bodh Gaya. Prayer flags, blue, green, red, white, yellow.
The Bodhi tree, a site of enlightenment. Monks, nuns prostrating.
Rickety rickshaw rides, the view across the seat, blocked by laps piled high with packs.
Roadside stands lining the streets, locks, bracelets, scarves, statues, and incense being sold.
Maroon and gold of the monks' robes. First tupa and momos, Tibetan soup and dumplings.
Children's wide eyes and hands touched to their hungry lips. The drone of mantras.
Rumors of the Dalai Lama's whereabouts. Piles of offerings.
From juice boxes to rupees to fruit to the local rum. Silence on a mountaintop.
The first wave of upset stomachs.
Also known as the plague.
Monkeys.
Clockwise meandering through the Mahabodhi temple.
The bustle of the tourists, the meditation of the monk amidst it all.
Varanasi, misty sunrise, narrow alleyways, damp and misty cold.
Smells of manure, incense, and smog. Cows wandering through the cobblestone streets.
Floating ashes, the burning ghats, a site of holy cremation.
Marigold candle offerings, clanging of bells, the drone of Hindu mantras.
Rituals, crowds amongst the ghats for the Ganga Aarti.
Water, flowers, lamps, incense, bells.
Child vendors hopping boat to boat.
Faded colors of block buildings lining the street, lining the horizon. Devout Hindus bathing in the Ganga.
Images. These images became a foundation for much processing yet to come.
You know, Seth, I don't really understand Hinduism.
Well, for one thing, there's 33 million gods, so it's clearly polytheistic.
There's actually only one ultimate god, so it's obviously not polytheistic.
No, there are three main gods, Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. Every other god is simply a reincarnation of one of them.
Well, another important part of Hinduism is dharma, or fulfilling your duty, and it's of utmost importance.
No. Rituals are the most important aspect.
Also, don't forget that vegetarianism is key.
That's not entirely true. Some people eat chicken, just never cow.
Well, what about reincarnation? Who knows how many lives we've lived before we reached moksha?
Actually, reincarnation isn't literal. It's just an encouragement to live a better life.
Well, now I have more questions than before. Okay, so what about Buddhism?
I'm a Hindu, and it's important to know that Buddha is a Hindu god, so Buddhism is technically a part of Hinduism.
Well, I'm a Buddhist, and it's actually its own religion.
Well, actually, it's not a religion, it's just a way of living.
But there aren't any gods in Buddhism. He's just the enlightened one.
Actually, there are many enlightened ones.
All right. This is just a little confusing. I'm curious about other issues. What about poverty?
The number of people suffering from poverty in India is heartbreaking.
Unfortunately, there is even corruption in poverty. There are organizations created who seek out the differently abled and use them to gain money for themselves and their organizations, and not truly those in need.
Some people that we see as impoverished choose to live this way and use begging as a way for income.
It's still important to remember those who are genuinely in need.
So what do we even do?
I don't know, another hard issue for sure. What about sexuality in India?
Homosexuality is illegal. End of story.
Actually, queerness is in much of Hindu mythology. Many deities have taken on male and female bodies. There are stories of men becoming women and even a king who gave birth.
Interesting. Similar discussions are happening in the United States.
So how is sustainability viewed in India?
There's trash everywhere in India. Everywhere.
But see, policies are being made to combat this, like the Green India movement.
India is running out of water and uses too much energy.
Solar panels are everywhere.
Thriftiness and reuse is found in almost every aspect of life. Wasn't it the Western countries that brought in processed food?
Wow, these issues are a lot more complicated than we ever thought. As we gain information, I just have more questions.
After these first couple of weeks, we went to Goa for 2 weeks, where we learned about the lasting influence of the state's colonization by the Portuguese. We also took movement classes and other art classes during this time. We then went to Kerala, the southernmost state of India. We each chose 2 cultural classes to take for 10 days. Here is a bit of what we learned. Kallari is India's oldest martial art form and is related to Hinduism. The intent with this art is not to harm the opponent, but to protect oneself. Some of the poses learned and being shown here include elephant, lion, horse, fish, and cat. In cooking class, students learned... In cooking class, students learned common Indian cooking techniques as well as how to use common Indian spices. Of course, they taste tested all of the food after it was prepared. Students went into violin with the Western expectations that they were familiar with. However, the only constant between their Western schema and what they learned in Kerala was that they indeed played a wooden 4-stringed instrument. Students learned to play while sitting cross-legged and were taught a complicated new scale as well as using a different tuning style. Kudigattan is a traditional storytelling performance primarily based in Kerala. Kudigattan means combined acting. This complex style of performance uses a unique method of communication. Students were learned how to communicate in this way by using facial expressions and movements to tell a story. Here, Ali is transitioning from a woman in a garden to a peacock. Carnatic singing is particular to India. This is the style that you heard at the beginning of our chapel. There are 2 main parts, ragas, which are scales that determine the notes of a song, similar to key signatures, and talas, which is a method of keeping the beat. This style of music also has notes that do not even exist in Western music. The kanjira is a tambourine-like drum in the South India Carnatic tradition and is notorious for its difficulty to play. Traditionally, the head of the drum is made out of lizard skin, but these are of goat hide. As the student's instructor often said, "I never asked for speed, only perfection." In mural painting, students learned techniques based on generations of tradition. This style of painting is often seen at Hindu temples. It always tells a story, but if you don't know the story before viewing the painting, you probably won't be able to figure out what it's trying to convey. You can see some of our creations after chapel. Students were taught asanas, or poses, meditation, and breathing exercises in yoga.
These three practices all come together in a sun salutation, which is being done here. At the end of each session, the student's teacher, Shaji, led meditative chants and left students with this advice. Respect the earth, respect your friends, respect your family, and respect yourself.
After our stay at the Sarang Center in southern India, followed by spring break, we traveled back to Delhi before heading into northwest India, into the state of Rajasthan.
Rajasthan, in Hindi, means land of kings and is the ancient home of a collection of forts, palaces, fancy tombs, and Silk Road oases.
Our activities during this period included ziplining over the blue city of Jodhpur, riding camels in the Thar Desert, staying in a centuries-old merchant hostel called a haveli, embarking on an unsuccessful tiger safari, and an encounter with a mysterious and powerful sorceress.
There we were.
At the majestic astronomical phenomenon known as
Jantar Mantar. We were taking a stroll past the world's largest sundial,
admiring its astonishing bigness,
when all of a sudden a cry broke out.
We turned.
It was our tour guide,
Gigi,
trembling and pointing a crooked finger towards the unnaturally normal park entrance.
Our heads snapped in unison,
eyes ablaze with curiosity,
ready for a new and exciting, authentic Indian experience.
The silence was deafening.
A figure shrouded in mystery and bodyguards glided into the park like a train gliding into its station.
Our eyes opened, our mouths wider.
There she was.
Hillary.
Rodham.
Clinton! She was actually there, and we have no idea why.
All right, so after Rajasthan, we got our first glimpse of the Himalayas as we traveled to Mysore. While in Mysore, we spent mornings taking Hindi and completing presentations. For Hindi, we were split up into two groups, those who had a baseline knowledge from taking it in the fall, and those of us who had absolutely no idea what we were doing. Now, I struggle enough as it is when attempting to learn Spanish, but I think it's fair to say we were all overwhelmed and confused by a whole new script, 13 different vowels, and 36 different consonants that all sounded the same. Apart from classes, there is much to do in Mysore. Full of interesting shops and welcoming locals, you could easily lose an afternoon looking for gifts and exploring the town center. Or you could walk up the hill and find yourself with an incredible view of your surroundings while buying a slice of triple chocolate cake from Landauer's Bakery. There are many hikes you could go on, as we usually had our afternoons free. From the Wildlife Reserve or Witch's Hill directly behind Kim's old school Woodstock, there is much to do. One of my favorite afternoons in Mysore was spent playing soccer with the guys' soccer team on their field down at Woodstock. I grew up with an extended family that doesn't hesitate to get together and play wiffle ball, soccer, or tennis, and personally felt right at home on a soccer field, playing a pickup game and screwing around and just having a good time. They then invited us to have tea up in their cafeteria, and we spent the next 20 to 30 minutes hanging out and trying to grasp more of this unique Mysore culture.
After jumping from city to city, Mysore was a welcome breath of fresh air. Not only because it was an escape from the smog in the cities, but it provided a place to contemplate and rejuvenate. Mysore is a town nestled in the foothills of the Himalayas, and it quickly became a home away from home. The staff at Domus End was kind, despite us breaking a few dishes each week, and they would give me rides to church and places around town when I couldn't walk due to an ankle injury. Although it was frustrating to rely on others for rides, it was a little convenient considering I got winded just walking up the stairs. Only a few minutes from the inn, there was a rocky path that branched from the road and overlooked the town. I could see buildings tucked into the mountains like a child before bed. At night, you could see the lights of a nearby city twinkle in the distance like a sea of stars. Looking up, the spectacle continued. A wave of stars crashed around me. The serenity that I experienced in Mysore is unparalleled to anything I've seen before.
Leh and Ladakh, North India. Monasteries and many of them, prayer flags everywhere, prayer wheels to spin when we first get in, and symbols that lie within the holiest spaces of these holy places that we can ask about but never fully understand. Feeling frustrated at not understanding then, but like with many things on this trip, ending up later realizing that we've learned a lot more about this than we thought we did, that asking questions does actually pay off. Here's what I've gathered about this religion. A religion that exists within simplicity and practicality, that feeds the hardest working with boundless energy, like my host mom and Alchi, and that connects the people of Tibetan origin. Yes, Tibetans were pushed out of their land not long ago, but they haven't forgotten where they've come from. This is it, hypothetically written from the perspective of a Tibetan Buddhist. We exist in a world of countless powerful spirits, gods, and demons, as humans trapped in the same cycle of suffering, samsara, as any other being that we interact with does. I, as a human within this coexistence, live in a community of other humans who are united by our blood, as children of this land, our precious land of Tibet, situated between China to our east and India to our west. We wake up to the moos of our cattle, the promise of our crops, and the prestige of the Himalayan mountain range. We love what is ours. We live and expand our numbers in it. We eat together and we dance in it. And those beings we coexist with are dancing right with us. Whether we see them or not, we feel their presence in everything we do. Our goal is to do what pleases, always, in order to sustain the balance of spiritual ecology. With that, lifetime by lifetime, I do what it takes to move closer and closer to escaping this cycle and becoming a being of enlightenment, reflective of Sangai, the Buddha. Since karma keeps me accountable, I choose to do good, meditating every morning and every night on words that have been passed from the awakened one and others like him to my ancestors and now to me. I recite using my voice, meditating through pujas using all of my body, and every day I hope to come into a fuller understanding of the wise ways of those before me. We all do this. With His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama as our trunk, we stay tied at our roots, whether in Tibet or whether we find ourselves welcomed in by a foreign land. And with open arms, India did welcome.
In Leh, we had homestays in Auchi Village, a small agricultural town nestled in lowlands beside the Indus River. For 3 days, we were divided into 6 different households. I lived with Emerson, Maya, and Hannah Walker, with Norbu and Dorma, our host parents. We helped prepare and ate a bunch of homemade noodles and steamed dumplings called momos, drank a ton of tea, as well as salty butter tea, planted 4 trees, stripped bark off trees to be used for an addition to the house, hauled at least 100 stones through the village, and hiked up a nearby ridge. Now I'll share a brief poem about my hiking experience. In the thin air, our lungs are straining. The loose shale is giving way beneath our feet, jagged handholds leaving scratches all over. We made it. We're at the summit. I am here. Prayer flags are billowing, incense is burning, shouting in Ladakhi, victory, victory to God. A frozen waterfall cascading below the snowy peaks, silence. I hear the dull sound of moving water, the Indus whispering along its way. A small white butterfly is meandering by. My, what wonderful things I am seeing today. Going, going down, I am skiing, with no ski but shoes and shale and dust. The wind is whipping. Shoes are sliding, eyes wide, adrenaline rising, laughing down, down, down. Chills running down my spine. I am laughing, I am here. Victory, victory to God.
Here are some statistics collected from our trip. Number of days spent in India, 105.
Number of different beds slept in, 36.
Number of religious sites visited by the entire group, 40.
The number of forts and palaces visited, 21.
Number of selfies taken by Yelisei at these sites and others, 1,129. The number of selfies taken by the rest of the group combined, 330.
The number of tour guides, 23, but only one Gigi.
The number of hours spent traveling by train, 73 and a half. Number of hours spent flying within India, 10 and a half. The number of hours spent on a bus, I can't count that high.
The number of cups of chai, over 6,000.
Number of ice creams eaten by Trevor alone, 70.
The record for the longest time without showering, 31 days.
Record for washing clothes the least amount of times, never, as in 0 times.
The total number of scarves and shawls purchased by our group, 113.
Number of pants bought, 80.
The number of kurtis bought, 52.
Number of times these clothes were torn, 78.
And finally, the number of books read by the entire group, 244.
Throughout our time in India, we had six primary leaders: Tashi, Searing, Tenzing, Glenn Conrad, and Kimon Bob Brenneman. Here is an introduction to part of our family.
My name is Tenzing, known as Momo, and I've known Kim since school. Her dad was my guidance counselor. He tried to guidance counsel me. Anyway, we have a company called Momo Tours, and this is you guys are our fourth group. Fourth group, and it's always a pleasure.
My name is Chiring Chodin Sandi.
Yes.
And I know Kim since how many years now?
Long time.
Yeah, long time ago. Going first, figure out the room and something wrong, and take the room and tell them to bargaining and.
You basically take care of them.
Yeah. I'm so happy sticking around you guys.
Thank you guys so much.
We love you. Thank you. Thank
you. Hello, my name is Glenn Conrad. Been traveling with Ian and Tripp. I am a Mennonite missionary kid who grew up in India from the time I was one till the time I was 18. So somebody had the bright idea that if I would come along and sit in the back of the bus and cause trouble, that would be good. So that's what I've been trying to do. And it's been great fun. It's really fun to see India again through new eyes. I've enjoyed it enormously, and I wish it could all be there. And that's about it, I guess.
My name is Lord Nima. I am from the mystical land, far away in the Himalayas, called Mussoorie. We had some great Tibetan food and learned a lot of Hindi. Kim and Bob have been very supportive to our family and to our company called Momo Tours, who took you guys on this trip, who were able to organize it with them, and we're very thankful for that. And to EMU, thank you very much. We are always so honored to have all of part of EMU with us every 3-4 years. Well, my job on the trip was to have fun, to have more fun, and to make sure everybody else is having fun. That was my job. See you in 2021. EMU.
And now I'd like to invite Kim and Bob to the stage, two wonderful people who acted as our substitute parents for the past 3.5 months. We had this common saying throughout our semester: India wins again. Every time an unexpected and undesirable circumstances took place, Kim was there to handle it with nothing but patience and grace. Whether it was waking up in the middle of the night to give us medicine, a student losing a passport on the top of a mountain, a 12-hour delayed overnight train, or getting 3 vans stuck at 18,000 feet in altitude on the snowy Himalayas, Kim, the things you did for us were countless, and we are beyond grateful.
Bob, as the finance manager and bona fide dad of this trip, your wallet came in so clutch and was in fact voted as the most valuable object on this trip. In all seriousness, we deeply appreciated your gentle spirit, your stylish flow, white socks, bright hats, and wise guidance. Kim and Bob, we have for you a framed picture, a painting done by our own Nicole Litwiller, some thank you cards, and a gift card to Taj of India. Thanks so much again.
All right, thanks so much for coming to our cross-cultural chapel. Because half an hour is never enough to share these stories and truly understand this experience, we would like to invite you to a time of chai and cookies and stories And some of our paintings will be there as well in the Campus Center main hall immediately following this presentation. If you have time and would like to talk to us some more individually and hear some more about our trip or ask any questions, we'd love to talk with you there. So in conclusion, I will offer an ending poem, and then we'll have a picture slideshow at the very end. The slideshow is done by Abigail Shelley and Justine Nolte and features music done by our very own Luke Mullett. This poem is called Rite or Ritual, and I wrote it for a creative coffee house that we held a few weeks ago in Missouri as a group. Rite or Ritual. Divine, sacred, God, spirit. With our words, we sow a suit for it, but it always bursts the seams. No regard for blush or shame, it seems, so it's fitting that this thing unnamed won't stay cinched in the Western clothes we've carefully stitched. Toothy temple bracelet tires, drama masters, twisted spires, got descending funeral buyers, and haunting red cremation fires, all things meant to awaken or inspire a newfound belief in a power higher. But just as with every story or sword, there's a second side, one not as heard. The labor behind every mug poured or the hours spent on a title word, and this religion cannot be ignored. It has its own unheard, where meanings are blurred and emotions stirred, a lesson we learned when a sixth wrath we incurred. Hot, heavy, and sudden, like a cloud it came. Before you could blink, no time to think, covering all with a bittersweet stink marked by traces of jaggery and shame. We broke a rule never spelled out in ink, but that doesn't excuse us from taking the blame. Shaved head, robed in red, prayer beads back bent, he shoves me aside, this monk is intent, nothing will dent his spiritual ascent, too bent on finding enlightenment to see the ones for whom the light was meant. And while the tourists on vacation, just a few with constipation, sit to watch a celebration, the priests with adulation all recite their incantations, and the fathers and the brothers watch the flames of the cremation, the souls of their relations now released to incarnation. Flame and spirit cycle ever-turning, no cessation. This annunciation is how the Hindus praise creation. But now their holy river sits in putrid desecration. The people choke the river and the water chokes the people. Bathe in it, it's sacred, but drink of it, it's evil. River drowned and trashed, the matter mostly fecal, and how about the dumping? That still happens, that's legal. The human and the natural, an embrace locked and lethal, a deadly combination for the river and the people, a mutual expiration by ash asphyxiation. Now follow the Ganga from this Varanasi Ghat, away from the bodies beginning to rot, and down to Kolkata where it's humid and hot, and the water runs free in the streets a whole lot, but drinkable, no, definitely not. Or upriver now, to our whitewater spot, where workers build roads and new vehicle lots, heedless of the noise and the trash that they brought. Big changes, by whom and for whom are they wrought? Just a little food for some thought. Shiny new shopping malls, plastic bags, snack stalls, machine-woven shawls and unlimited calls, urine-sprayed walls and traffic at a crawl. How can we have the gall to say this is progress? We're the last link in this long chain reaction, a nuclear bomb that the Brits set in action, a centuries-long ploy for power that culminates here now in this hour. Please, sir, won't you buy a flower with a 50-rupee cash transaction? He's smiling, I'm smiling, decisions are made, but I feel like I've been played. It's handmade. Smiling is universal, they say, but in this instance, as I pay, it only colors our relationship gray, a gray tinged with green, as the factor of cash seen turns the space in between from potential pal to money machine. The great prophet of capitalism, the invisible hand, the proselytes of progress, the Tata name brand, and the government eager to give business a hand, they've changed this land, just as its religious forebears made their own stand. What is sacred? What is profane? Elephant rides or the truth of a train? The rites of a ritual or the rites of the people? Or are they the same? And so I ask you again, as mantras and dogmas begin now to blend, but in India, the Ganga still flows to its end. What is sacred? It depends. Thank you.